The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, the 18th chapter. If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you, so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them. The Gospel of the Lord. The words we use and the people to whom we speak and how we speak to them have an impact on our relationship with that other person. So listen to how a woman describes her soon-to-be groom in the Song of Solomon, the fifth chapter. My beloved is all radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. His head is the finest gold, his locks are wavy black as a raven, his eyes are like doves beside springs of water bathed in milk, fitly set. His cheeks are like beds of spices yielding fragrance. His lips are lilies distilling liquid myrrh. His arms are rounded gold set with jewels, his body is ivory work encrusted with sapphires. His legs are alabaster columns set upon bases of gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. His speech is most sweet, and he is altogether desirable. That carries a lot more weight than if she would say, "He's hot." The significance and the power of the words we use shape our relationships with others. But likewise, the way we speak to a person also impacts that person. So if I say I think that people are beautiful and wonderful, there's some level of engagement in that. But if I say, "Joe, I think you're beautiful and wonderful," it has a different impact on you, doesn't it? And if you're sitting there saying, "Wow, I wish he would say that to me," or "I'm glad he didn't say that to me because I would be embarrassed," either way, you're getting the fact that that kind of engagement, person to person, shapes a relationship. So the words we use, the way we express ourselves, and the way that we engage and speak to other people can strengthen the relationships we have with one another. And that's important to grasp as we look at Jesus' teaching in the Gospel of Matthew in the 18th chapter, because Jesus is giving for us a way to engage one another so that it builds up the community, it strengthens the community, it brings health to one's relationships with one another. I think that before we actually look at what Jesus teaches, however, we need to take a look at some modern trends that can become stumbling blocks to that kind of communication. And I call those two trends talking heads and taciturnity. Now, talking heads refers to the way that we receive our news and our information in this generation. I had the privilege of listening to Annie Griffiths speak at the Chautauqua Institution back in August. She's a photographer for National Geographic. While you may not recognize her or her name, you probably would recognize her powerful photos in that magazine. And she, as she began her speech, which was the need to develop a more in-depth look at the people we hear about in the news, said her hope when this 24/7 news cycle came into being was that there will be an opportunity, a chance for depth. He said, unfortunately, what has happened is that it has become breaking news and drivel. She goes on to say that we must realize that people are more than the tragedies that they are enduring at the moment. And her work in photography is to engage that whole person's life and depth. She wants the media to tell the whole story, not just that glimpse of that moment of tragedy. And I'm delighted whenever I see our local station, WGAL, on occasion now from 7 to 7:30, taking a story and developing it for 30 minutes so we get more than the soundbite during the evening news. It's that kind of depth I think we're yearning for. Because while people say our attention spans are getting shorter, in the book Microtrends, the author writes, there's a large group of people that he calls the long attention spanners. And these are people who want to hear an idea. They want to engage that idea. They want to think about it. They want to talk about it. They want to get at the root of what's happening in that conversation and make an informed decision based on that conversation. He said, so while there are some whose attention spans are getting shorter, there is this group called the long attention spanners. And he points out the case of local races. He said, the long race used to be the marathon. And so you would enjoy the half marathon, 13.1 miles, which a couple of our members did in the heat yesterday. I'm impressed by that. And then the goal used to be the 26.2 mile, just 26.2 miles. But now there's ultra marathoning, which is 100 miles at once. So this stretching out and getting longer. In any group of people, you have 20% of the people who will be against everything you propose. Not because it's logic, but just that's the way they are as people. You have another 20% who will buy into something right away without really thinking about it, which leaves the 60% in between who are going to engage the concept and to think about it and talk about it and study it and reflect before making a decision. It's those undeclared in elections that candidates worry about because they're the ones that wait and listen and think and process, and usually are the ones that shape the outcome of the election. I think I walked through a spider web on my way up. The extension of the long attention. Because if we go into a conversation with other people without being willing to engage in depth the issues, the conversation is not going to work. Now, well, Loretta LaRoche, in her book, Life is Not a Stress Rehearsal, gives us the phrase that we are stuck in this time of catastrophizing and awfulizing. She said, what that leads us to do then is to engage with other people, but we don't engage with other people who are different than us. We engage with people who will agree with us, the people who will immediately come to the same conclusion we do. So what we're looking at is the willingness to engage in depth with one another in a way that strengthens and builds relationships among the community. It is part of the nature and character of this congregation to be that way. And I celebrate that we bring that strength to our community. The other modern-day challenge to this kind of engagement is the issue of taciturnity. And it's a word that was coined by Mary Margaret Funk in her book Thoughts Matter, where she explored the spiritual discipline of early monastics. And she asked the question, why is it that the monastics had these times where they had extended periods of silence as part of their spiritual discipline? What she teaches in her book is that they believe that with extended periods of silence, what it put into a person's character is that it reduced the person's need to comment on everything. So to be taciturn, to have taciturnity, is not having the need to comment on everything that happens. Now, I enjoy Facebook, and I enjoy seeing what people are doing and getting those updates. But I have to tell you that at those times when something significant happens, all of a sudden there is this verbal diarrhea that just comes out there on Facebook because everyone has to comment right away. And I saw someone finally post, they said on Facebook, there's Throwback Thursday. I recommend get over yourself Friday. Withhold the need to comment on everything. Because it comes out of a knee-jerk reaction, a feeling about something that you need to talk about right away without thinking about. And it's really an issue of stewardship in the church, as I've said to you before, because what I've discovered is people who need to do that expect either that person to whom they're speaking to respond or someone to do something about it. And so it's a stewardship of time and energy because people spew that stuff out and they expect a response for it. But these in-depth conversations that grow relationships and build community will only be strengthened if we have the gift of taciturnity, not needing to comment on everything. And while we as a congregation are strong on depth, we are not as strong on taciturnity. There are times when we have a need to comment on everything, whether it's beneficial to the community or not. It's when we bring that sense of wanting to have an in-depth engagement with one another in ways that aren't knee-jerk reactions based on our own feelings, that we can then take a look at what Jesus is asking of us, of a way to communicate with one another, particularly with those who are causing trouble in the community, to build relationships and to strengthen the community. And so what he is asking is for a way that is face-to-face. Okay. Now, they didn't have email when Jesus was around, but if they did, he would add that to the list. It's not about sending an email telling someone how ticked off you are, because emails are literally verbal grenades. You throw it at the person, you step back, and you can watch the damage in front of you. Because face to face, what happens if you challenge the person They can ask you why. They can hold you accountable for what you're doing and saying. They can challenge you in the conversation. So it is face-to-face, embodied communication. It starts at the lowest level. It doesn't go from a problem to bringing everybody into the equation. Our human tendency, when someone does something that makes us angry, is to develop a posse. You know, I know that if something happens in the parish from a member that makes me angry, which never happens here, by the way, I'm talking about other churches, I can go to my posse and they will immediately agree with everything I say, right? See, it doesn't really work because they're healthy, functional, mature people. You see, it keeps at the lowest level first. Because we want to bring the posse. We want to bring these masses with us so that we can threaten the other person into agreeing with what we have to say. The greatest church line ever that backs up this theory is the phrase, "Pastor, people are saying." Now, my intuition is usually there aren't that many people saying it, and that the intention of that phrase is more to bring a sense of power and control to the conversation instead of working together in conversation. To keep it at the lowest level. And when you do a face-to-face communication and you keep it at the lowest level, the other challenge you face is this: the possibility that you might be wrong. Now, I wish I could say I could empathize with that, but I'm never wrong. But as I talk with the... See, I keep saying this, but you need to hear it. If you're laughing, I'm okay with you. If you're not laughing, I'm worried. Because you need to see and hear that about yourself. Because we all think that what we have to say is always right. If you engage face to face, you might have to encounter the reality that you might be wrong. And about once a year, I encounter that reality about myself. It's finally to remind us of what the goal is for communication, what the goal is for engaging one another. The goal is to build community of strong, mature, healthy, vital relationships. And why do we want strong, mature, healthy, vital relationships? Because we have a mission to do, do we not? And our mission is to make disciples of all nations. And it's only a community of faith that is mature and strong and vital and healthy that can engage in that mission to its fullest extent. And that is my passion for this congregation. Apostle Paul in Romans 12, I think, gives us a mantra that would be good to learn and memorize in shaping us in this way of living. It's in Romans 12, starting in verse 3. "For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. Whereas in one body we have many members, and not all the members have the same function. We who are many are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. And we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. And so let your love be genuine." Amen.